Part 2. The Phoenix and the Gorgon. Chapter 6. As much as he hated what they had become, Captain Balhan of the Iron Hands couldn't help but admire the skill of the fleet masters of the Diasporex. For nearly 5 months they had managed to evade the ships of the 10th Legion around the Carolus system of the Lesser Bifold Cluster with an efficacy that was beyond even the longest-serving captains of the Iron Hands. That was set to change now that the Ferrum and her small company of escort ships had managed to carve a pair of vessels from the larger mass of the enemy fleet and drive them towards the gaseous rings of the Carolus Star from whence this endeavour had begun. Ferrus Manus, Primarch of the Iron Hands, had noted bitterly that it was a tragedy of their own making that would see the Diasporex destroyed. They had come to the attention of the 52nd Expedition quite by accident, when forward reconnaissance vessels had traversed the western reaches of the cluster and detected some unusual Vox transmissions. This region of space comprised three systems, two of which contained a number of habitable worlds that had been brought back into the Imperial fold with a minimum of resistance. Remote probe ships had revealed the existence of other systems deeper in the cluster, with the potential to support life, and, at first, it had been surmised that the signals had come from this unconquered region of space. Prior to the order for the mass advance, the unusual transmissions had once again been detected. This time, in Imperial space around the Carolus Star. The Primarch of the Iron Hands had immediately ordered the expedition surveyor officers to locate the source of the transmissions, whereupon it was quickly deduced that an unknown fleet of some magnitude was at large in Imperial space. No other expeditions were authorized to be operating close by, and none of the newly compliant worlds had fleets of any significance. Thus, Ferrus Manus had declared that these interlopers must be found and eliminated before any advance could begin. And so the hunt had begun. Balhan stood behind the iron lectern that served as his command post on the Ferrum, a mid-sized strike cruiser that had served faithfully in the 52nd Expedition's forces for almost a century and a half. For 60 of those years it had been under Balhan's command, and he prided himself that it was the best ship and crew in the fleet, for anything less than the best was weakness that he would not tolerate. Named for the 10th Legion's Primarch, Ferrus Manus, the bridge of the Ferrum was stark and Spartan, its every surface gleaming and pristine. Though there was ornamentation, it was kept to a bare minimum, and the ship looked much as it had when it first launched from its moorings in the Martian shipyards. She was fast, deadly, and the perfect ship to serve as a hunter of this unknown fleet. The hunt had proven to be problematic, for the fleet clearly did not want to be found. Eventually, however, the origin of the mysterious fleet was revealed when the battle barge Iron Will had chanced upon an unidentified cluster of vessels and intercepted them before they could flee. To the surprise and delight of the expedition's sizable Mechanicum contingent, the vessels had turned out to be of human origin, and interrogation of the surviving crew had been undertaken immediately. This revealed that the ships were part of a larger conglomeration of vessels the captured crewmen had called the Diasporex, and belonged to an age of terror long since past. Balhan was a keen student of the history of ancient Earth, and had read extensively of the golden age of exploration thousands of years before the darkness of old night had descended upon the galaxy, when humanity had travelled from Earth in vast colonization fleets. The very purpose of the Great Crusade was to reclaim what had been won by the early pioneers, and then lost in the anarchy of the Age of Strife. Such ancient fleets were the stuff of legend, for the ships of the earliest starfarers had taken the Children of Terror to the furthest corners of the galaxy. To stumble upon their descendants was declared providential by Ferrus Manus himself. With information gleaned from the captured crew, contact was established with these brothers of antiquity, But much to the 52nd Expedition's disgust, the Diasporex had incorporated many incongruent elements in its makeup over the long millennia. Ancient human vessels flew alongside starships belonging to a wide variety of alien races, and instead of rejecting such contamination as the Emperor had dictated, the fleet masters of the Diasporex had welcomed them into their ranks, forming a cooperative armada that plied the darkness of space together. In the spirit of forgiving brotherhood, Ferus Manus had generously offered to repatriate the thousands of humans that made up the Diasporex to compliant worlds if they would submit to the rule of the Emperor of Mankind. The Primarch's offer had been rejected, out of hand, and all communication broken off. Faced with such an insult to the Emperor's will, Ferus Manus had no choice but to lead the 52nd Expedition into a legitimate war against the Diasporex. Balhaan and the Ferum were the forward vanguard of the Primarch's war, and now he had the honour of striking back at the humans who dared turn their back on the Emperor and the emergent Imperium. Like the vessel he commanded, Balhaan was stark and unforgiving, as befitted a warrior of the Kha'Gul clan. He had commanded a fleet of ships on the icy seas of Medusa by his 15th winter, and knew the shifting temperaments of the sea better than any man. No man who served under him had ever dared question his orders, and no man had ever failed him. His Mark IV armour was polished a lustrous black, and a white wool cloak embroidered with silver thread hung to his knees. A greenskin cleaver had taken his left arm 3 decades ago, and a Deuthright flenser his right barely a year later. Now both his arms were heavy augmetics of burnished iron, but Balhaan welcomed his new mechanized limbs, for flesh, even Astarte's flesh, was weak, and would eventually fail. To receive the blessing of iron was a boon, not a curse. An industrious hubbub filled the bridge with an excited hum, and Balhaan permitted the crew their excitement, for the Ferum was to have the honour of the first kill. The main viewing bay was filled with the dark void of space, lit up by the brilliant yellow glow of the Carolus star. A multitude of flickering lines looped across the display, flight trajectories, torpedo tracks, ranges and intercept vectors, each one designed to bring an end to the two vessels that lay a few thousand kilometres off his prow. The irony of this hunt was not lost on Balhaan, for despite his rank as captain of a ship of war, he was not a man without sensibilities beyond his duties. These were human vessels, and to attack them was to destroy a piece of history that fascinated him. "Come about to new heading, 023," he ordered, gripping the lectern tightly with his iron fingers. He did not dare betray any emotion as they closed on the two wallowing cruisers they had managed to shear from the Diasporex fleet, but he could not help a small smile of triumph as he watched his gunnery officer come towards him with a data slate clutched in his eager hands. "You have a solution for the forward batteries, Axarden?" demanded Balhaan.
"I do, sir."
"Inform the ordnance decks," said Balhaan, "but close to optimum range before unmasking the guns."
"Aye, sir," replied Axarden.
"And the containers they ejected?"
Balhaan pulled up the feed from the starboard pictures, watching as the enormous cargo containers that the cruisers had abandoned drifted away. In an attempt to gain more speed, the enemy cruisers had ditched whatever cargo they were hauling, but it hadn't been enough to prevent the Imperial ships from catching them.
"Ignore them," ordered Balhaan. "Concentrate on the cruisers. We will return for them later and examine what they were carrying."
"Very good, sir."
Balhaan watched the range to the two cruisers close with a practiced eye. They were following a curving trajectory around the star's corona, hoping to lose themselves in the electromagnetic clutter that spurted and foamed around its edges. But the Ferum was too close to be thrown off by such a clumsy subterfuge. Clumsy. Balhaan frowned as he wondered at his prey's apparent foolishness. Everything he had learned of the Diasporex suggested that its captains were highly skilled, and for them to believe that such an obvious stratagem would throw him from their scent was inherently suspicious.
"Ordnance decks report all guns ready to fire," reported Axarden.
"Very good," nodded Balhan,
worried that there was something he wasn't seeing. The two ships followed a divergent course, peeling away from one another, and Balhan knew he should order his ship to all ahead full to pull into the gap and give both of them a good broadside. But he kept his counsel, knowing there was something wrong.
His worst fears were suddenly realized when his surveyor officer shouted, "New contacts! Multiple signals!"
"Where in the name of Medusa did they come from?" shouted Balhan, swinging his heavy body around to face the wide waterfall displays of Surveyor Command.
Red lights were winking into life on the display, and without asking, Balhan knew that they were behind his ships.
"I'm not sure," said the Surveyor officer, but even as he spoke, Balhan knew where they had come from, and returned his gaze to the command lectern.
He called up the external pictors and watched in horror as the vast cargo containers, abandoned by their quarry, split open and disgorged scores of gleaming darts, bombers and fighters, no doubt.
"All ahead full," ordered Balhan, though he knew it was already too late. "Come to new heading 970 and launch interceptors. Activate close-in defence turrets. All escorts to perimeter protection duties."
"What about the cruisers?" asked Axarden.
"Damn the cruisers!" shouted Balhan, watching as they ceased their flight and began turning to face the Ferrum. "They were nothing more than decoys, and like a fool I fell for it!"
He could hear the groaning metal of the deck shifting beneath his feet as the Ferrum desperately sought to turn to face this new foe.
"Torpedoes launched!" warned the defence officer. "Impact in 30 seconds!"
Balhan shouted, "Countermeasures!" though he knew that any torpedo launched from such close range was practically guaranteed to hit.
The Ferrum continued to turn, and Balhan could feel the juddering fire of the defence turrets as they opened fire on the incoming ordnance. Some of the enemy torpedoes would be shot down, exploding soundlessly in the void, but not all of them.
20 seconds to impact.
"All stop," ordered Balhan. "Reverse turn. That might throw some of them off."
It was a vain hope, but right now he would take a vain hope over no hope. His interceptors would be leaping from their launch rails by now, and they would bring a few more torpedoes down before engaging the enemy forces. His vessel heeled hard to the side as the strike cruiser twisted her bulk faster than she was ever designed to, and the creaks and groans of the vessel were painful to Balhan's ears.
"Ironheart reports that it has engaged the enemy cruisers. Heavy damage."
Balhan returned his attention to the main view screen, watching the smaller Ironheart wreathed in flickering detonations. Pinpricks of light flickered between the vessel and its attackers, the silence and distance diminishing the ferocity of the conflict.
"We have our own problems," said Balhan. "The Ironheart is on her own."
Then he gripped the lectern as he heard his defence officer shout once more.
"Impact in 4, 3, 2, 1.
The Ferrum rocked hard to port, the deck lurching underfoot as the torpedoes impacted on her rear starboard quarter. Warning bells began chiming, and the display on the view screen faded briefly before vanishing completely. Fire burst from ruptured conduits, and hissing steam vented into the bridge.
"Damage control!"
shouted Balhan, cracking the command lectern with the force of his grip. Servitors and deck ratings struggled to contain the blaze, and Balhan watched as burnt crewmen were dragged from shattered control stations, their flesh and uniforms blackened by fire. He leaned over to gunnery control and shouted,
"All guns, open fire! Full defensive spread!"
"Sir," cried Axarden, "some of our own craft will be in the engagement zone."
"Do it," ordered Balhan, "or there will be no ship for them to return to, and they will die anyway. Open fire!"
Axarden nodded and staggered across the ruptured deck to carry out his captain's orders. The enemy fighters would soon find that the Ferrum still had teeth. The Primarch's chambers aboard the battle barge Fist of Iron were constructed of stone and glass, as cold and austere as the frozen tundra of Medusa, and First Captain Santar could almost feel the chill of his icy homeworld in the design. Blocks of shimmering obsidian carved from the sides of undersea volcanoes kept the chamber dark, and glass cabinets of war trophies and weapons stood as silent sentinels over the Primarch's most private moments. Santar watched as Ferus Manus stood nearly naked before him, his servants washing his iron-hard flesh and applying oils before scraping him clean with razor-edged knives. As each gleaming, oiled limb was finished, his armourers would apply the layers of his battle armour, gleaming black plates of polished ceramite that had been crafted by Master Adept Malevolus of Mars.
"Tell me again, Equerry Santar," began the Primarch, his voice gruff and full of the molten fury of a Medusan volcano. "How is it that an experienced captain like Balhan was able to lose three vessels and not manage to bring down one of our enemies?"
"It appears he was lured into an ambush," said Santar, straightening his back as he spoke. To serve as first captain of the Iron Hands and equerry to the Primarch of the Iron Hands was the greatest honour of his life, and while he relished every moment spent with his beloved leader, there were moments when the potential of his anger was like the volatile core of their home, unpredictable and terrifying.
"An ambush?" snarled Ferus Manus. "Damn it, Santar, we're becoming sloppy. Months of chasing shadows have made us foolhardy and reckless. It will not stand."
Ferus Manus towered above his servants, his knotted flesh pale as though carved from the heart of a glacier. Scars crossed his skin from the wounds he had taken in battle, for the Primarch of the Iron Hands was never one to shirk from leading his warriors by example. His close-cropped hair was jet black, his eyes like glittering silver coins, and his features were battered by centuries of war. Other Primarchs might be considered beautiful creations, handsome men made godlike by their ascension to the ranks of the Astartes, but Ferus Manus did not count himself amongst them. Santar's eyes were drawn, as they always were, to the gleaming silver forearms of his Primarch. The flesh of his arms and hands shimmered and rippled as though formed from liquid mercury that had flowed into the shape of mighty hands and somehow been trapped in that form forever. Santar had seen wondrous things fashioned by these hands, machines and weapons that never dulled or failed, all beaten into shape or crafted by the Primarch's hands without need of forge or hammer. "Captain Balhan is already aboard to personally apologize for his failure, and he has offered to resign command of the Ferum."
"Apologize?" snapped the Primarch. "I should have his head just to make an example."
"With respect, my lord," said Santar, "Balhan is an experienced captain, and perhaps something less severe might be in order. Perhaps you might simply remove his arms."
"His arms? What use is he to me then?" demanded Ferus Manus, causing the servant with his breastplate to flinch.
"Very little," agreed Santar. "There are probably more than if you remove his head." Ferus Manus smiled, his anger vanishing as swiftly as it had arisen.
"You have a rare gift, my dear Santar. The molten heart of Medusa burns in my breast, and sometimes it rises in my gullet before I can think."
"I'm your humble servant," said Santar. Ferus Manus waved away his armourers and moved to stand before Santar. Though Santar was tall for an Astartes and was clad in his full armour, the Primarch still towered over him, his silver eyes shining and without pupils. Santar suppressed a shiver, for those eyes were like chips of napped flint, hard, unforgiving, and sharp. The scent of lapping powder and oil was strong on his flesh, and Santar felt his soul open up beneath that gaze, his every weakness and imperfection laid bare. Santar was like unto Medusa himself, his craggy features like a cliff face shorn from the flanks of a mountain, his grey eyes like the great storms that tore the skies of his home world. Upon his induction into the Legion, many decades ago, his left hand had been removed and a bionic replacement grafted in its place. Since then, both his legs had been replaced, as had the remainder of his left arm.
"You are much more than that to me, Santar," said Ferus Manus, placing his hands on his equerry's shoulder guards. "You are the ice that quenches my fire when it threatens to overwhelm the good sense the Emperor gave me. Very well, if you won't let me take his head, what punishment would you suggest?"
Santar took a deep breath as Ferus Manus turned away from him and returned to his armourers, the dreadful respect the Primarch instilled leaving his mouth dry. Angrily he pushed aside his momentary weakness and said,
"Captain Balhan will have learned from this debacle, but I agree his weakness must be punished. To remove him as captain of the Ferum would damage the morale of the crew, and if they are to restore their honour, they will need Balhan's leadership."
"So what do you suggest?" asked Ferris.
"Something to make it clear that he has earned your ire, but which shows that you are merciful and willing to allow him and his crew the chance to earn back your trust."
Ferus Manus nodded as the armourers fitted his breastplate to his backplate, his silver arms extended either side of him as they dipped linen cloths into iron bowls of scented oils and applied them to his hands.
"Then I will appoint one of the Iron Fathers to joint command of the Ferum," said Ferus Manus.
"He won't like that," warned Santar.
"I'm not giving him a choice," said the Primarch.
The Anvilarium of the Fist of Iron resembled a mighty forge. Huge hissing pistons rising and falling at the edges of the audience chamber, and the distant clang of hammers echoing through the sheet metal of the floor. It was a cavernous space, with the pungent aromas of oil and hot metal heavy in the air, the space redolent of industry and machines. Santar relished the chance to come to the Anvilarium, for mighty deeds were planned, and unbreakable bonds of brotherhood were forged here. To be part of such a fraternity was an honour few would ever dream of, let alone achieve. It had been 2 months since Captain Balhan's disastrous encounter with the Diasporex ships, and the 52nd expedition was no nearer to achieving the destruction of the enemy fleet. The new caution engendered by Balhan's punishment ensured that no other vessels had been lost, but also meant that there had been few opportunities to engage in a decisive battle. Santar and the rest of his warriors of the Averni clan stood at parade rest, flanking the great gate that led into the Iron Forge, the Primarch's most secret reclusium. The Morlocks gathered at the far end of the Anvilarium, the glimmering steel of their Terminator armour reflecting the red flames of the torches that hung in iron sconces on the walls. Soldiers and senior officers of the Imperial Army stood together with the robed adepts of the Mechanicum, and Santar nodded respectfully as he caught the glowing eye of their senior representative, Adept Xanthus. As captain of the first company, the duty of acknowledging the Primarch was his, and he strode to the centre of the Anvilarium, the Legion standard-bearers marching to stand beside him. One standard bore the Primarch's personal banner, depicting his slaying of the great worm Azenoth, while another carried the iron gauntlet of the Legion. The devices on the banners were stitched in gleaming silver thread on black velvet, their edges ragged and torn where bullets and blades had snatched at them. Though both had seen the hard edge of battle, neither one had yet fallen or faltered in 1,000 victories. As the gates opened fully, with a hiss of escaping steam and a furnace heat, the Primarch strode into the Anvilarium, his armour glistening with oil and his pale flesh ruddy from the heat. With the exception of the Terminators, the assembled warriors dropped to their knees in honour of the mighty Primarch, who bore his mighty hammer, Forgebreaker, hefted across one huge dog-toothed shoulder guard. The Primarch's armour was black, its every surface hand-forged, its every curve and angle perfect. Its majesty matched only by the being that wore it. A high gorget of dark iron rose at the back of his neck, and embossed rivets stood proud on the silver edge trims of every plate. The Primarch's face was as though carved from marble, his expression thunderous, and his heavy brows furrowed in smouldering fury. When Ferus Manus marched among his warriors, any joviality was sacrificed to his warrior persona, a ruthless war leader who demanded perfection and despised weakness in all things. Behind Ferus Manus came the tall figure of Sistor, the fleet's master of astropaths, swathed in a robe of cream and black that was edged with gold anthemian. His head was shaved, and ribbed cables snaked from the side and top of his skull, vanishing into the darkness of the metallic hood that rose stiffly above his head. The astropath's eyes glowed with a soft, pink light, and in honour of his position with the Iron Hands, his right arm had been replaced with a mechanical augmentic. He clutched a staff topped with a single eye in his other arm, and a golden pistol, presented to him by the Primarch, was holstered at his side. Santar stood before the Primarch and held his hands out to receive the Primarch's hammer. Ferus Manus nodded and placed the enormous weapon in Santar's outstretched hands, the weight enormous and unbearable for anyone but one of the Emperor's Astartes. Its haft was the colour of ebony, elaborately worked with threads of gold and silver that formed the shape of a lightning bolt, and the head was carved into the shape of a mighty eagle, its barbed beak forming the striking face and its tapered wings the claw. The honour of holding this weapon, forged on terror by the hands of a Primarch, was incalculable. He stood to one side, placing the hammer with its head between his feet, and the two banner-bearers fell into step behind their great leader as he began circling the chamber. Not for Ferus Manus the ritual of conferences or meetings. He held his councils of war in a room without chairs or formality, where debate and questions were encouraged.
"Brothers," began Ferus Manus, "I bring word of my brother Primarchs."
The Iron Hands cheered, always grateful for news of their Astartes brothers throughout the galaxy. To celebrate the triumphs of other expeditions was only right and proper, but it also gave the Iron Hands the motivation to push harder and to achieve more. For their legion would be second to none, perhaps save the War Master's legion.
"It appears that the Imperial Fists of Rogel Dorn have been summoned back to Terra, where his warriors are to fortify the gates and walls of the Imperial Palace."
Santar saw quizzical looks around the chamber, and their confusion mirrored his own. The Seventh Legion was to quit the Crusade and return to the cradle of mankind? Theirs was a glorious legion, with courage and strength the equal of the Iron Hands. To withdraw them from the fighting made no sense. Ferus Manus also saw the confusion on the faces of his warriors and said,
"I know not what prompts the Emperor's decision, for I know of no shame endured by the Imperial Fists that might occasion such a recall. They are to serve as his Praetorians, and though such an honour, honestly given, is great, it is not for the likes of us when there are wars yet to win and foes yet to defeat."
More cheering rang out over the din of hammers, and Ferus Manus again circled the chamber, his silver hands and eyes shining in the perpetual gloom of the Anvilarium.
"The Wolves of Russ push ever outwards, and their tally of victories grows daily, but we should expect no less from a legion that hails from a world that beats with the same fire as our own."
"Any word of the Emperor's children?" asked a voice. And Santar smiled, knowing the Primarch would enjoy speaking of his closest brother. The glacial mask slipped from Ferus Manus's face, and he smiled at his warriors.
"Indeed there is, my friends," said the Primarch. "My brother Fulgrim journeys here, even now, with the best part of his expedition."
Yet more cheers, louder than before, echoed from the metal walls of the chamber, for the Emperor's children were the most beloved of legions to the Iron Hands. The brotherhood shared by Fulgrim and Ferus Manus was well known, the two demigods having formed an instant connection upon their first meeting. Santar knew the tale, his Primarch having told it many times over the feast table, the details known so well to him it was as though he had been there himself. It had been beneath Mount Narodnia, the greatest forge of the Urals, where the Primarchs had first met. Ferus Manus, toiling with the forge masters who had once served the Terawatt clan during the Unification Wars. The Primarch of the Iron Hands had been demonstrating his phenomenal skill and the miraculous powers of his liquid metal hands when Fulgrim and his Phoenix Guard had descended upon the sprawling forge complex. Neither Primarch had yet met the other, but each had felt the shared bonds of alchemy and science that had gone into their making. Both were like gods unto the terrified artisans, who prostrated themselves before these two mighty warriors as though fearing a terrible battle. Ferus Manus would then tell Santar of how Fulgrim had declared that he had come to forge the most perfect weapon ever created, and that he would bear it in the coming crusade. Of course, the Primarch of the Iron Hands could not let such a boast go unanswered, and he had laughed in Fulgrim's face, declaring that such pasty hands as his could never be the equal of his own metal ones. Fulgrim had accepted the challenge with regal grace, and both Primarchs had stripped to the waist, working without pause for weeks on end, the forge ringing with the deafening pounding of hammers, the hiss of cooling metal, and the good-natured insults of the two young gods as they sought to outdo one another. At the end of 3 months' unceasing toil, both warriors had finished their weapons, Fulgrim having forged an exquisite warhammer that could level a mountain with a single blow, and Ferus Manus a golden-bladed sword that forever burned with the fire of the forge. Both weapons were unmatched by any yet crafted by man, and upon seeing what the other had created, each Primarch declared that his opponent's was the greater. Fulgrim had declared the golden sword the equal of that borne by the legendary hero Nuada Silverhand, while Ferus Manus had sworn that only the mighty thunder gods of Nordic legend were fit to bear such a magnificent warhammer. Without another word spoken, both Primarchs had swapped weapons and sealed their eternal friendship with the craft of their hands. Santar looked down at the weapon, feeling the power within it, and knowing that more than just skill had gone into its forging. Love and honour, loyalty and friendship, death and vengeance, all were embodied within its majestic form, and the thought that his Primarch's sworn honour brother had created this weapon made it truly legendary. He looked up as Ferus Manus continued his circuit of the Ambularium, his face thunderous once more.
"Yes, my brothers, cheer, for it will be an honour to fight alongside Fulgrim's warriors, but he only comes to our aid because we have been weak."
The cheering immediately died, and the assembled warriors looked anxiously from one to another, none willing to meet the eye of the angry Primarch as he spoke.
"The Diasporics continue to elude us, and there are worlds in the Lesser Bifold Cluster that require the illumination of the Emperor's truth. How is it that a fleet of ships thousands of years older than ours, and led by mere mortals, can elude us? Answer me!"
None dared respond, and Santar felt the shame of their weakness in every fibre of his being. He gripped the haft of the hammer tightly, feeling the exquisite craftsmanship beneath the steel of his augmetic hand, and suddenly the answer was clear to him.
"It is because we cannot do this alone," he said.
"Exactly," said Ferus Manus. "We cannot do this alone. We have struggled for months to accomplish this task on our own, when it should have been clear that we could not. In all things we strive to eradicate weakness, but it is not weakness to ask for help, my brothers. It is weakness to deny that help is needed.
To fight on without hope when there are those who would gladly lend a hand is foolish, and I have been as blind as any to this. But no more.
Ferrus Manus strode back to the entrance to the Anvilarium and put his arm around the shoulders of Astropath Sistor. The mighty Primarch dwarfed the man, and his very nearness seemed to cause the Astropath pain. Ferrus Manus extended his hand, and Santar stepped forward, holding Forgebreaker out before him. The Primarch took up his hammer and held it aloft as though its monstrous weight was nothing at all.
"We will not be fighting alone for much longer," cried Ferrus Manus. "Sistor tells me that his choirs sing of the arrival of my brother. Within a week, the pride of the Emperor and the 28th Expedition will be with us, and we shall once again fight alongside our brothers of the Emperor's children."